Welcome to the Elijah Rising podcast. Elijah Rising is an organization empowering women recovering from sexual exploitation. This episode is going to help you become more aware about the issue of sex trafficking and inspire you to take action.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Elijah Rising podcast. My name is David. I'm joined for the third time on this podcast. We have Joe Madison with Demand Disruption. And in case you don't know Joe, Joe is a subject matter expert on demand related factors and buyer behavior. Joe is a husband of 27 years and proud father of three and a native Houstonian. So I know you appreciate our love for Houston, love for our city. And I actually remember getting involved in this 7 years ago, and someone was reading an email that you had sent, and someone was like, man, this guy, he wants to leave his oil and gas career, and he wants to, like, just help.
That's a red flag. There's a lot of red flags there. Oh, this guy's a zealot. We should not let him.
So I was like, that's a little crazy, but you're crazy, we're crazy. Yeah. I got to know you through your volunteering with the Van Tours. You and your wife actually led Elijah Rising Van Tours for a number of years.
Yeah.
And, you know, on those Van Tours, Joe was very passionate about, he even developed something called the escalation dynamic, which we'll probably hit on today. But it was on those Van Tours that he actually developed that. And later on, you began to get involved with a guy named Bo Abdullah. Mm. And then later, you know, now you're executive director of Demand Disruption. And, you know, Joe's filling a big gap that has been around for a long time. And we're beginning to see the pieces come in that are needed to fill that gap.
Yeah.
And so welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for that lead in. I think we're done. That was everything. Yeah.
So this podcast, we want to focus, I know you do a lot of work on, you know, educating people about pornography, parenting, but I recently went to your gala and I heard all these amazing testimonies and stories of the sex buyer outreach that you do. And so that's what we wanted to make this episode about. And so in the anti-trafficking space, there's, you know, certain lingo that we use. One of those words is demand. And can you just help our audience or for someone who might be just awakening to the issue of human trafficking, what is demand? What is a buyer?
Yeah, I like the modifier you added at the end. Demand, typically we talk about demand, supply and demand. You've probably heard that, of course, for consumables. But when we talk about it in the anti-trafficking space, sadly, it's not much different the way that people are treated as commodities. But the buyer part is the part that we really drill down on. A consumer is another word you said. So if we look up buyer in the dictionary and look at the actual specific term, there is something that talks about a transaction, paying for something. But the other two words that are used are consumer and a variation of consumer. So a buyer is somebody that consumes. And when they consume something that is illicit or commercial and sexual nature, that then creates demand. So when we talk about a buyer, it's not that person that either buying sex or paying for some illicit act necessarily. It's somebody that's generating demand because hundreds of millions of dollars are made without ever reaching for your wallet.
Yeah. And that's what I think is important because, you know, we're two men. So I grew up, as a teenager, we saw the advent of smartphones. So I grew up in an age where porn was readily available. It was in the guys' locker rooms in middle school, even high school. And we were all, you know, accessing it. So I know amongst men, there's this idea of like, well, I watch porn, but I don't go buy sex, so that's okay. But really, you know, they're both kind of feeding this economic system.
Yeah.
So is someone who consumes porn, are they kind of in that same category?
Yeah, I'll put it this way. How much did you pay for your last Google search? The last time you used the Google search engine, you got directions, you found a restaurant. Did you reach for your credit card and pay for it?
No.
Were you invoiced for it? What is one of the most affluent and powerful entities on this earth? Google. Why? Because as soon as you clicked on that and searched for whatever it is you searched for, you became a consumer, a user, a customer. And so let's say I want to do an advertisement with Google, or I want to buy ad space or something. They say, okay, great. We have 3.7 billion customers. Here's your price. Here's your audience. You see, I didn't have to pay for anything for them to generate revenue on the back end. Now, pornography, it took them a little while, but they figured out that business model is the way to go. You used to have these, you know, maybe a little clip and it was a teaser, and then you'd reach for your wallet, but then you're getting caught because the bill's coming home, or it's on your credit card or your work credit card. What they realize is we want this to be as absolutely invisible of a transaction as possible. And so they just started giving away the content. But you better believe that model is the same. If I click on pornography and I'm watching it and I have a site visit, somebody's making money off that video, but that website is making money off of ads, off credit card transactions when they do buy things. They're making money off of the webcam services that always pop up before the next video, right? There's not only an escalation, but there is a sales cycle that you don't even realize that you're part of. And whenever you're consuming, you're creating that demand, and it absolutely is related to human trafficking.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting now because, you know, it's not even just on porn sites where this, you know, sex ads are published. I was on a popular news site, and there was an ad that was saying, you know, meet sexy singles or something like that.
Yeah.
And so it's very, very prevalent, and I believe that's why we're seeing such a huge increase in demand. And so this is one of the reasons why we need demand disruption to fill that gap and reach out to these people.
Yeah, there's a concurrent dynamic happening, and it's been happening in different industries for as long as there's been capitalism. But if we think about normalizing things that before were not acceptable in culture, not okay, and we see our culture does that with regularity, the motivation behind that is sometimes it's very honest and genuine. It's for representation for people who are not being represented the way that they should be. But oftentimes what it is to bring the threshold of what's acceptable down so that I can profit on it as a company, or I can find a way to sell or create a market and have that market have an acceptance within everyday culture. And then the thousands and the 10,000 and 100,000 and the millions and the billions start to flow. That is something that pornography has perfected. You mentioned earlier that I was had a 25-year career, and most of that was in either project management or strategic sales. I've said this in presentations. I don't know if I've ever shared it in our podcast time together, but pornography is one of the most perfect sales cycles I've ever seen.
Wow.
Imagine what happens when I go to a website. I click on the video I came to see, right? I didn't pay for it. I'm in the privacy of my own. I'm going to get instant gratification. There's an unlimited supply. And there are also other variations that pop up. That's why we talk to men at the point of arrest. We get to know them. We ask them about their porn issue. And we say, are you watching the same pornography you were when you started? 3 months later, 3 years later, there's an escalation. And so I came for the content, but now there is this conversion where a webcam pops up or some other. It takes me from me in a video to me in a person, even though it's this virtual, we're not in the same room together. And then what else is on there? Meet local girls, meet singles, meet lonely moms. I'll keep it clean. But you click on that and that takes you to an escort site. That is a direct conduit to human trafficking and prostitution. So I came for this and I ended up here. And I just talked to a guy 2 days ago in a hotel operation with Montgomery County Sheriff's Office. And that was his exact story.
Yeah.
That's how he ended up there in handcuffs.
Yeah, so let's go there. You know, I've heard you say you meet with people on the worst day of their life. Mm. What is that like?
It varies. The guy before that guy that I was just talking about had a story all prepared. And his story was, well, I'm actually doing research for men who have trouble talking to women, and so I was going to pay her for her time. And all this story, none of it was true, but to him, he came into this with this premeditated, if something goes wrong, I've got a story.
Yeah,
I know that because I mentioned earlier, I got a text message right before we started that Mauricio Gerbasi, who runs our Defender program and arranges for us to be on site with police officers, said we are at 498 men that we've talked to at the point of arrest. And we'll be, that's counting the 14 in this operation that we did. So what that's like being there with somebody who was showing up for one thing, and it probably wasn't the first time they've shown up for that thing. So they had an expectation of what they were going to experience. And then altogether different, and they're arrested. There's a fight or flight. There's a panic. There is a method we use to get past that, because our whole goal is, yes, the buyer is the person who's perpetuating trafficking. No question about it. And they need to be held accountable, and they will be. But that's not the time for us to get our pound of flesh. That's not the time for us to really tell them how they're contributing to being this dirtbag that's victimizing people. We need to get to the second conversation, because if we don't change that buyer's heart, if we don't get them connected with resources, ultimately, that person is probably going to buy again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it was interesting because, and I want to talk to kind of what are the factors that lead up to someone, you know, going into a brothel. And I believe you have a great kind of visual, a great kind of way for us to understand what's at play. But, you know, I was even at a church and talking to this young guy, and he was telling me, and we did a presentation on pornography, and he was telling me, you know, David, I drove by a massage parlor, and the thought just entered my mind, I could go in there and buy, like, and he was like, I'd never had that thought before. I've never wanted to,
yeah,
but just driving by, this idea just popped in his head, and he began to entertain it.
Where were you when you had this conversation?
I was at a church.
Was at a church?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was a young, you know, maybe college, you know, I don't know, 18, 19 years old.
I ask you that question because, and then that it even further brings us along. So an 18 or 19 year old person raised in faith,
yeah,
at a church. We talked about a normalized environment in our culture where sex is, hey, who are you to judge? And there are some things that are used with good intention. There are some that are absolutely maliciously used so that people can profit on the exploitation of others. But here's this young man that in his culture, in his reality, you know, he wasn't a teenager when smartphones came around.
Yeah.
He probably cut his teeth on them. Thank you for lumping me in there, by the way. When I was a teenager, like the dawn of the internet was when I turned 18. So smartphones were a bit away. But the point of what you're saying has to be, we got to pause. If you want to understand what a buyer is, that man is on the timeline. That young man is on a timeline. And we talk about timelines all the time, but that timeline, if I ask him, if he were here today, I'd ask him, how old were you when you first started watching porn? And my absolute, I won't guarantee it, everybody's different, 9, 10 years old, very early. And that timeline continues. So it takes us into the contributing factors question.
Yeah.
How did this kid drive by a place, first of all, recognize that it probably wasn't illicit massage business? That's supposed to be common knowledge? Well, we see them and we start to realize, oh, that's one of those places.
Yeah.
And then for that to occur to him to possibly go inside, and if I did, would I even get caught? He lives in a culture, the reality is, that's not that abnormal.
Yeah.
And he's a consumer, and there's a product to be bought. And here's an outlet to buy that product. We try to normalize the word outlet in the work we do. If you're in a strip club, outlet. If you're on street prostitution, outlet. Hotel, massage, cantina, those are all outlets. You know, the reason we want to use that word is because that's where you go to buy things.
Yeah.
We've got to stop soft selling what these places are. Oh, well, I didn't know. Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
That's how you ended up there. So his timeline, there are so many contributing factors. For him to ask you that question, first of all, courageous, and I'm glad he did. But him to think that he could just go in and buy sex, that's a product of his environment, and that environment normalizes illicit sex.
Yeah. And would you say that originates in pornography?
Those 500 men we talked to at the point of arrest, we asked certain questions. And one of the questions is, how did you find this place? I can tell you this, if it's a illicit massage business or a hotel room, they found it because they were on a porn site and there was a link to meet local girls, or they clicked on that, took them to an escort site, skipped the games, all these different escort sites. And that's where they essentially consummated the deal to show up and meet this person. They happened to select one that was an undercover police officer. But the process is the same. And it just feeds that process. So for every man that we talk to, I'm not going to say everybody that watches pornography goes and buys sex. That'd be ridiculous. But just about every man we talk to that's buying sex, has a porn issue or consumes pornography. So yes, it's a huge factor. But other contributing factors beyond that would be, in our culture, if you're, let's say that you are watching pornography, and I talked about the sales cycle on a webpage. The same is true for any product. If you see that and you decide that you want it, you go and buy it. That's because that's acceptable for products. It's becoming more and more acceptable for people. And for men in our culture, you mentioned it. You were on some other page and meet local girls.
Yeah.
I was doing a grocery order for HEB about 2 weeks ago. And this 21 pictures that are too hot to show of girls in a grocery store, they use the theme of why I'm there to shop. And then I'm not the consumer anymore. I'm the product. They are wanting me to click, because when I click, I create revenue. It's the same process. So we have to stop and ask ourselves, are we consumers or being consumed? And these men we meet at the point of arrest, these men that go through our programs, they do not make that connection of how they went through a sales process and made this decision. I'm going to reiterate, accountability is not an option. Like, they still need to be held accountable, no question.
Yeah.
But there are other parts of our life where people create wreckage. A drug addict, a lot of wreckage in their family. An alcoholic. These are acting out behaviors. These are cause and effect. It's an addiction that somebody who has an internal struggle that is medicating it wrong, have come to this destructive behavior that's hurting others. It's not the exact same thing, but the process is very much the same thing for buyers we talk to.
Yeah.
What are the contributing factors, and how can we interrupt and connect them with services so that they have resources instead of failing over to that behavior?
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that in the second half of this podcast, but we're going to take a quick break right now. Hey, thank you for listening to the Elijah Rising podcast. If this episode has impacted you in any way, let us know. Go on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, or go to our website and send us a message. Let us know how these episodes have impacted you. And we provide this podcast and our services of doing outreach into the community and bringing awareness to human trafficking and 24/7 housing. We provide all of this free of charge. And we're only able to do that because people make donations and people support and get behind this work. And so if you want to be a part of that, you can go to ElijahRising.org/donate. And giving $10 or $20 a month goes a really long way. And I would encourage you to take that step and join us in the work to end sex trafficking. Well, hey, everyone, welcome back. We're just going to dig right in and kind of go into a next layer. Let's deal with this, because I know this is at the forefront of a lot of people's minds. And when you first join this issue and you hear about trafficking, you hear about there are people that are buying children, young girls, teenagers, adult women. And that element of trafficking is like someone's forced to be in that and they don't want to be there, but people are still buying them. You begin to feel angry. You begin to feel that kind of like, well, you know, one of the biggest responses we get is, you know, honestly, people respond with violence. Like, why don't we just shoot these people? Like, I'm not joking. That's an honest
castrate.
Yeah. That's an honest response that a lot of people get. And so, what would you say to that?
I would say I understand it, because that was me. At our event we had the end of last month, I couldn't think of what to open our breakfast with. What kept coming back to me, though, was my first experience talking with a buyer. And then my second experience, when we were in an illicit massage business working reverse with law enforcement, and the same hatred. It was hatred. There's no other word for it. This man sits down, and I thought I was ready, because we talked about how we're going to talk to these people, these guys. And what I realized is, no, this is a predator. This predator is the reason there's trafficking. And I would rather give him 5 minutes of justice than a 5 minute conversation. You know, close the door. Let's take care of this, right? That is understandable. And not only is it understandable, I think it's natural for human nature to want to take something as awful as trafficking and understand who's doing it and simplify the equation.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. If you don't change the cause and effect, if you don't have a pattern interrupt then that person will continue the pattern. That is our purpose. Our purpose, first and foremost, is to fight trafficking, be a barrier between the exploited and those that would exploit them, and change the buyer's heart through working with buyers. You see, it's not the buyers. The buyers are the way to stop this thing. And we've got to be able to understand that. Now, you did mention something a little while ago that I want to make a clarification. We don't work with pedophiles. We don't work with men who buy child sex. One, we're not equipped to do that. I believe that there's a clinical level of evaluation that has to happen there. And two, I don't know that I would even be capable of that, right, if I'm being very honest with you.
Yeah.
So the men that we work with, it doesn't make it better, but it does allow us to get on this plane of understanding what led them there and why are they there to buy. So if you're outraged by that, I'll totally understand it. If the thought of a buyer buying sex infuriates you, good. It should. That action is abhorrent. But if we're not willing to understand what got them there, because we talked about a timeline earlier, and I won't go through the whole timeline again, but nothing happens the day it happens. Nothing happens right away. If I get an accident, it didn't happen right then. Sure, we made impact, but that person ran a light 10 seconds earlier. If I'd left the house a minute later, like there is this point of conversion when it comes to a buyer that is at the end of a timeline of contributing factors. And when we understand those factors, then we can be serious about interrupting the behavior. And that's the most direct way to fight human trafficking.
Yeah. And I believe that, because when I was at your gala, your breakfast, and the guy shared his testimony,
man,
it was so powerful. And I know there are people that are in his shoes and all they need is to hear his story. He was able to overcome this. So that gives you hope, that you can overcome this as well. And so,
and
that's how we create kind of a chain reaction.
And he had somebody come up to him after, and he told me this, and he told me twice. I think he forgot he told it to me the first time. He's probably in shock. But I talked to him a couple of days ago. He's working with one of the guys in our extended program to try to gain restoration so he never buys again. And he told me, this woman came up to me afterwards and didn't say I'm sorry, but basically apologized for how much she hated buyers and hated me when she found out on the program that we were going to have an interview with a former buyer. And he said, I don't know what to say to that. And she said, what I heard was a man who was broken and who was acting in a broken way and hurting others. And for you to take accountability and tell a story of restoration, she's like, I'm a little bit ashamed. And she's like, no, don't be ashamed. But what I hear from that is the power of revelation. Understanding something for the problem that it is and the behavior that somebody is having, and then interrupting it and doing it in a systematic, repeatable, successful way so that we don't have trafficking. The emotion can't be turned off, but understanding that the emotion is justified, but the outcome can be sabotaged if we don't stay vigilant in what our purpose is, that's one of the things that we have to balance on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking of, you know, you said you're about to have your 500th person. Like, it's an exponential effect, because really buyers often become, well, sometimes they'll become multiple repeat offenders.
I would say more than sometimes.
More than sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Because that young man said, what if I went in there? What's worse is, what if he went in there and got away with it? We asked men the question, if you'd have gotten away with it, what would have happened? He said, I probably would have kept buying. We have men, you saw it in some of the testimonies in that breakfast, but we have men tell us, in fact, the third man we talked to, when I told you the first time I was on one of these things, I was really furious and I had to just shut up and listen to our founder, Bo Abdullah, lead with empathy and vulnerability. He led with empathy and vulnerability in such a way that it didn't compute for the first few guys. But then the third one said, the second one and the fourth one. I don't know why I remember that, but I do. I'm glad I got caught. I needed help. This person was in this place of shame, and they acknowledged that they wanted and needed help. And we heard that at the breakfast with some of the buyer interviews that we showed. But I think what it also speaks to is, if we have somebody that gets away with it and has a place that they feel is safe, like an illicit massage business, then they're probably going to do it again and again. And that's where the pattern interrupt is crucial.
Yeah. Yeah. And so let's talk about that, because we have a lot of viewers of this podcast that are doing interventions, mm-hmm. they're doing outreaches. We even had someone like in Germany reach out to us and was like, we do outreach in Germany. You know, we love what you guys are doing. Yeah. Of course, when we're in these places where prostitution is actively just kind of out in the open or even behind closed doors, mm-hmm. we're seeing buyers, we're seeing men. You know, how would you suggest engaging with a buyer in that kind of environment?
Yeah, so first of all, if you're watching this and you're a volunteer and you're an interventionist, thank you. Thank you for the willingness to do something in this fight. There are different ways to go about any intervention, I think. But no successful intervention starts at the point you begin the conversation with the person. You got to prepare. And you have to understand sort of the psychology of why somebody would be out there. The fact of the matter is, if you engage with a buyer at the point of a purchase, they're probably going to be very standoffish, or they're probably going to be ashamed and lash out, or maybe even be apologetic and remorseful. But a lot of that is reaction. And so if you're going to engage with a buyer, have a plan. One of the plans would be do so in such a way that has empathy and vulnerability in it. Yeah. Meaning, hey, I'm out here because we're talking to some of these women and praying for them. Well, what brought you out here? Open-ended question, right? Safe, open-ended question, no accusation. That's going to be hard if you don't prepare. Human nature is going to want you to tell you, hey, I see you, you know, and I get that, I do. But what'll come of it? Maybe you feel better, but does that person stop their behavior?
Yeah, or you scare them off.
Or you scare them off.
Shuts them down the conversation.
That's right. That's right. They come back tomorrow or they go to another part of that to complete the buying process. Our whole goal is to get to that next conversation. And so if you were to gauge a buyer, an open-ended question, maybe following that with empathy if they're actually honest about it. No, I'm just hanging out here, you know, trying to meet a girl. You know, having an opportunity to engage with somebody in that way. We actually have a script that we prepared for y'all, for your intervention teams, because they were running into buyers. And I thought it was really cool that one of the staff members was like, you know, I read this script, and at first I was like, nope, I'm not saying that. That's too soft. And then we had our training, and at the end of it, that person came to me and said, I get it.
Yeah.
I see. I understand. It's a learned process, and it's something that we make available to people. If they want to know, what do I say, what do I do, or other organizations, we've actually got a training coming up for some of our nonprofit friends on buyer mentality, buyer motivation, buyer deterrence, and then buyer engagement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a key. And we've even been inspired because we've always made our focus of just reaching women. I mean, there are men as well being sold too.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we really want to even develop a team that's just specific to reaching the men that are walking into the massage parlors, or, you know, they sit in their cars in a line on Bissonnette. Yep. It's like, yep. You know, they're so reachable. It's just having the willingness and, like you said, the vulnerability and empathy to do it.
Yeah. Not to pick words, but I think they're accessible in that moment. Are they reachable? Will a conversation actually happen? That is a different story. So seeing them there, I think a heart that wants to make a difference says, I'll go talk to them. You may be engaging somebody in a very different mindset. Some of these men get high before they go buy sex.
Yeah.
There might be an instability there. As we know, a lot of the women in their life also are high because what a horrific way to have to get through a 24-hour period, right? So there are some strategies and safe ones and ones that also are effective. And there are some that are mostly led with the heart to do good, but meaning well isn't always doing well.
Right. Yeah, that's good, Joe. And, you know, you're in this process of, you know, y'all have a strategy and you work with law enforcement and you meet people at the point of arrest. You're getting a inside look at what a lot of people don't get to see. So what is something that you would want to see change or improved in that process of arresting someone at the point of solicitation?
Yeah, I love that question because it takes us into the strategy. If I'm on an operation and I'm working with the sheriff's office or working with the police department or volunteers are there, what we're seeing is the arresting process, the booking process. We're seeing everything downstream. That person's made that decision. They're being arrested. They're being held accountable. However, what happens after that? In Texas, I am very proud because we pushed for this from a Class B misdemeanor, which was an absolute insult to anybody who had ever been trafficked or exploited. That's what buying sex was, a Class B misdemeanor. Through legislation and lobbying, this anti-trafficking community, Elijah Rising included, got that to a Class A. And now it's a state jail felony. That is serious time and fines. I'm proud of that as a Texan. But what we're missing an opportunity on, what I would like to see change, is that buyer who's arrested facing a state jail felony is the most motivated he's ever going to be to make it go away. And you just got to accept sometimes they're going to agree to a program because they want it to go away. They don't want it on their record. That's fine. I don't care. When they start, I'm not so worried about their initiation. But the program makes all the difference. So what I would like to see is that in the state of Texas, and I'm working with a couple legislators on how to word this for legislation, have buyer program quality minimums. If a guy is terrified of a state jail felony and says, yes, I'll do a program, that program better not be an online program that they can do right now. Truth of the matter is I can go online, and I did this because I have no apparently social life. I remember when I did it. I was sitting in a Lazy Boy movie was playing. I was like, huh. I looked it up. There is a buyer deterrent, whatever the name of it is, and it is a state-approved, county-approved program where I can go online and take an online course to show that I took an awareness course, not unlike if I were to do a ticket dismissal.
Yeah.
So here's a state jail felony. And if I strike a deal with the DA's office, which deals are motivation, and if we do the right thing with them, they're a good thing. I finished this 8-hour course in 47 minutes. I read every word of it, and it was just on my phone. And there were these portrait one-pagers for each one of the 73 pages. And the problem here is about 16 of them had something to do with trafficking or buying behavior. The rest were laws in certain states and what an STD is and things of that nature. That's not going to change buyer behavior. We got to couple this leadership in Texas of having it be a state jail felony. Because remember, the buyer's the problem, so let's make it a felony. That is the punitive part of it. If you send somebody away with no rehabilitation, you just probably created a buyer for life. Like, they're not going to learn the lesson because they were punished necessarily. Some might. But if you really want to change and have the tip of the spear, the work that law enforcement are doing, to really have a carryover impact, that buyer needs to be required to fulfill a course that has him go through an awareness process of the connection between buying and trafficking, a support system. They've got to be connected to something like SAA or something that's going to last the rest of their life, a resource. They've got to have true information about what it is to be in the decision-making process of somebody who's addicted to pornography or has bought before. They need to be into some measure of professional counseling. 5 sessions is what we require in our program. And finally, they need accountability. They need somebody to go shoulder to shoulder with them through this process. This is not undoable. We've been doing it for 5 years. Yeah. The STAR program has been done, and we're talking with other cities about replicating it. If it's something like that, then we use the leverage of a state jail felony to truly impact change. Because you said it earlier, we're coming up on our 500th buyer. We might be there because we're on a live operation right now. 500 buyers is an exponential number of exploitations and purchases. We have a man in our program right now. It was the first time he ever bought. He did a polygraph, which we require to make so that these guys get completely honest. And it was true. First time he ever bought. Unlucky, buddy. But we also have a guy who was in the same class about 28 times by his estimation.
Wow.
I would say the average is between 3 and 5 times, the guys we talk to. Think of how much of an effect it is to change a buyer's heart. They never buy again. That's not one interaction. That's not one exploitation. That's not one motivation of this supply and demand model. That's multiple.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love that you brought up the accountability. And I wish we had more time to go on. We'll probably have to do another episode. Yeah. But, you know, this isn't something that you can do it yourself and overcome. But even overcoming pornography, accountability is essential. So it's the same thing as overcoming sex buying. It's not like you could just go through this course, but you really need someone to walk alongside.
It's so true. And I would say that the thing that the men in our program learn pretty early on, whether they believe it or buy it yet, our target is not for you to stay married and fix your marriage. Our target is not for you to get your charges dropped. Our charge is so that you never buy sex again. And you never buy sex again because you have undergone this simple equation. Identity plus your purpose is going to equal your legacy. That is what we believe. And so when we talk to men, we start talking to them about their beliefs, their values, their attitudes. Because everything they're doing is in conflict with that. And that's where the therapy comes in. If they hate themselves and think they're not worth anything, then they're going to behave in such a manner. Getting some of that professional help makes all the difference. But whenever we have a person have that realization that buying is an acting out behavior, but there's internal struggle that can be reconciled, that's when lives are changed.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Joe, we thank you so much for being on this podcast. I've learned a lot. I know if you're listening, I know you've learned a lot. And if you're listening and you really feel a connection to getting involved with the demand side, you know, you have volunteer opportunities. Why don't you just share how people can learn more about what you're doing, get involved in the demand disruption?
Thank you. I appreciate that. If you're at the end of this podcast and you haven't angrily hit the key because you weren't buying any of the stuff this guy's selling, if this has enlightened you in any way, consider being a financial partner of ours. Consider, it's hard to decide to give to an organization that works with the people who are responsible for trafficking. It's a lot easier to give to an organization that's focused on interrupting the buying process that fuels trafficking. And I hope that some of this has become an explanation of that. Volunteering. We've got opportunities for men and women. We're actually working on something really cool with some partners, some friends of ours, the Houston 20. They have a junior council. And these students, we're going to work on showing them how to change ordinances so that an illicit massage business goes to open. We've got a process of how cities can change their ordinances so that they have to agree to all of these things that are deterrents. We're going to get high school students involved in that process. And so if you have a heart for this, go to demanddisruption.org, our website, click on Become a Defender or learn more, then there'll be an opportunity for that. You can find us on social media. If you follow Elijah Rising, Demand Disruption, if you have a heart for anti-trafficking, find one that has a responsible and effective social media platform, because then that information is coming to you. We're all busy. We forget even the things that are important. And so Demand Disruption on social media, Facebook, and then Demand Disruption on Instagram as well.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. And I'll encourage you, you know what, if you're a man and you're watching this podcast, you know, this is when I first got involved, there was a lot of women kind of being involved in doing anti, and it was often seen as, well, this is just a women's issue. But we're quickly learning, no, this is also a man's issue. We need the men.
That's right.
To rise up. We need fathers, to take in this next generation. And that's why I love what you're doing. It's not just Demand Disruption, but you know, you're mentoring young boys, young men, raising them up, and that's what's critical. And so if you're watching this and you're a young guy or you're a man and you're thinking about getting involved, there is a place for you, whether it's with Elijah Rising or with Demand Disruption. We need men in this fight, and so I would encourage you to just take that next step of action. Go to check out Demand Disruption's page. Go to ElijahRising.org. Learn more about us. Begin to just get informed. Listen to this podcast. Listen to a couple episodes. And that's how we all got started. I didn't plan on being in the anti-trafficking space. I know Joe didn't.
No, it's y'all's fault.
Yeah.
I think I said that on every podcast. I'll say it again. It's your fault. I got involved with Elijah Rising. And unfortunately, you can't unhear and unsee things that are injustice. You just have a decision to make at that point. Yeah. And the last thing I want to say is to your point. We have people who are angry about buyers and men are the problem, someone said in a conference once. And I got the opportunity to say, I agree with you. But if men are the problem because they're the buyers and they're fueling trafficking, they're also the fastest way to find a solution. And that's your call to men getting involved. If you're a man and you're struggling in any way, you can always reach out to Defender at demanddisruption.org. that will be discreet, and we will help work through whatever unwanted sexual behavior you might have. And remember, it's not just you. You are changing a legacy whenever you make those changes for your own kids and the people that you come in contact with.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Joe. Thank you for tuning in. Like, subscribe, share, and we'll talk to you on the next podcast.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode. If you were inspired by this content today, please share, rate, and leave a review. Also, please consider making a donation at ElijahRising.org/donate. Your support helps us continue the vital mission to combat sex trafficking. Until next time.